I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go into the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
It may have been a few weeks since our last episode, but it has not been quite a few weeks for our Seattle Seahawks. Welcome to another episode of the only and official UK Seahawks podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, this week with Ross Bell somewhere out there in the ether, is joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good, and it's completely my fault that we've not been podcasting for a while. I have to say, I've been so frustrated by everything that's gone on that I've basically been making up every excuse under the sun to not have to talk to you two. Unfortunately, you know, the bosses from above and, you know, probably the Seahawkers podcast across in the States have been judging us, and I can feel in the voodoo doll they've probably got of us pricking away, making us podcast, that I've relented. And so here we are, Stu. It's 9 o'clock, it's Tuesday night, and it's time to pod.
I thought you were going to introduce Top of the Pops then.
I could do. Yeah. Here's your host, Miss Cilla Black. Different show, I know, but it's
time. Yeah, but it's also probably the safest host you could choose from that era as well.
Yeah, I went
for it. Yeah. Obviously, as we said, there has been quite a bit of activity in Seattle at the VMAC for Seahawks. It all kicked off, though, before free agency, which is only about seven, 8 days old. It did start in very angry, in a blur of anger and disappointment, and it was quite emotional as well. But the Seahawks did bid adieu to two of their perennial starters.
Sideline. Intercepted! Richard Sherman was right there!
I wish somebody would have told me that someday these will be the good old days. All the love you forget, and all these reckless nights you regret. Someday soon your whole life's gonna change.
Second down, Rodgers dancing around, and down he goes. Bennett was in there with Frank Clark.
15 yards on the ground from the gun. Brady intercepted. A rarity. Tom Brady gets picked off by Richard Sherman.
Skelton from his own end zone, and it's intercepted. There goes Richard Sherman. That is a touchdown.
Four receivers in the game. Kittle was tight end, Breida stays in. Hoyer gets time, nobody open, and he's brought down for a loss. Sacked on the play by Michael Bennett.
Somebody would have told me, babe, that someday these would be the good old days. All the love you won't forget, and all these reckless nights you won't regret.
Brown with a block, and there he goes, down. Hit hard on the play, Michael Bennett, the two-time Pro Bowler.
Do you subscribe to the Key and Peele theory? It's a third pump to get you.
I think a third pump, yeah. Two pumps get you a baby, three pumps get you a fine.
John has it, throws, and it's intercepted by Richard Sherman. He's going down the sideline. He has followers, and not just on Twitter. Touchdown Seahawks.
But okay, you think you're better than Darrell Revis is right now?
In my 24 years of life, I'm better at life than you.
Okay. Let's not get personal here. I just want to know. Do you think you're better than Darrell Revis is right now?
I'm better than you.
Somebody would have told me, babe, that someday these would be the good old days.
Anticipation is part of your game.
Anticipation is everything. That's my wife.
Is right now for them.
There's Chris Thompson by himself up top.
On second down, Cousins in trouble. And Cousins goes down. It is Michael Bennett. Fitzpatrick going to go deep down sideline. Intercepted by Richard Sherman. God spins into a sack for Bennett.
What allows you to be able to do this? Here you are, you know you're facing a season ender, and you're still out there for your guys.
Because that's the reason why I was playing in the first place. You know, I was playing for my guys in the first place. So, you know, after you get hurt, it's not like you know, they knew what I was playing for. You know, they knew I'm out to give them everything I got. So.
Anything else, guys? Everybody seems to be pretty down, you know, for you. How do you sort of move it around?
You just got to stay positive. That's all you can do.
Thanks,
Richard. These will be the good old days. All the love you forget. And all these reckless nights you regret. Someday soon your whole life's gonna change. You'll miss the magic of these good old days.
Kaepernick and John Crabtree. Broken up. Picked off. This game is over. Knocked in the air. Intercepted by Smith. Off the hands of Richard Sherman.
So the Seahawks, a few days before free agency started, trading and releasing, respectively, Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman. Before we move on to Sherman, which could be quite a long segment on this podcast, we'll talk about Michael Bennett, who was traded to the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles for a pick and a wide receiver that only the deepest dynasty, fantasy dynasty GM had heard of in Marcus Johnson. But with all due respect to Marcus Johnson, it's just a weird deal to see the Seahawks pull off. Even though it did appear that everyone, including the team and player, knew it was coming, Adam.
Yeah, I'll preface everything I say on this episode with regards to players that I'm looking at 2019 as the season we go again, and so, you know, if I think a player. I'm not interested in signing players that are only going to offer something for 2018, because the next good Seahawks team for me is going to be built in 2019. So everything I say on this episode is going to be built on the idea of whether or not I think a player could have offered something in 2019. And I have to say, Michael Bennett is certainly a player that I thought could do that. You know, I think if you look at his snap count when he first came to Seattle versus what he was playing in last year, I think he's almost like an extra half the number of snaps that he's taking, which as you're getting older is obviously not what you want to do. And for me, if the most stacked defensive line by a good distance in, you know, the league want to take Michael Bennett, for me, I think he could have offered something here. And I have to say that Philadelphia must have been laughing all the way to the bank with what they might manage to give up for him. And ultimately, we're only really saving $2 million on Michael Bennett. Now, for me, the risk reward of keeping him, to get rid, I would have wanted a lot more than a fifth round pick and an athlete, you know, to get rid of someone who's been such a key figure of this team in the last few years.
Yeah, the team received a fifth round pick from Philadelphia and wide receiver Marcus Johnson. The team sent Michael Bennett and a seventh round pick from this year's draft. Yeah, it was just, almost seemed there's a lot behind the writing and deal and noise coming from the Seahawks about Michael Bennett, and I don't think it'll probably ever come out. It just seems, as you say, for someone who got 8.5 sacks in 2017, he played on an injury which ended the Danian Tomlinson's Hall of Fame career 5-6 years ago, plantar fasciitis, and he still managed to play at a level which was, as you say, it was probably the best of the bunch up front when you compare it to other players who were coveted more to stick around in Seattle than Michael Bennett was. It just makes very little sense. As you say, the compensation, a fifth round pick is a pick which the team, we were told, were not looking to add. And if they were going to trade players, we were told that we're going to look for that big old gap between the pick in the first round to the next pick on day three of the draft that the team currently have, and they didn't do that. It just kind of seemed to ship him off in the dark of night, kind of like the Colts going to Baltimore and all that, whichever way they went. No, Ravens, the Colts going to Indianapolis. So it just seems all very strange. And yeah, it's just, he's, as I said, he is one of the more fun Seahawk players. But on field, he was someone who, given the money he was due, which is pretty minimal compared to some of the money that they've not only handed out since, but also paying to other players who are not on Bennett's level. It was just disappointing. But in Philadelphia, he's, as you say, he's right at home, and the rotation which looks awfully similar to what the Seahawks boasted in 2013, Adam.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, if you consider that we got, what, 4 sacks out of Dwight Freeney this year? Was it 3 sacks? I mean,
three and a half, I think.
So they can probably use Bennett 20% more than we used Freeney. And Bennett currently is probably twice the player that Freeney was. I mean, he could be an absolute sack machine if he's using the right time. You know, Doug Peterson's such a smart coach. It wouldn't surprise me if they get an absolutely brilliant, you know, bordering on, if not Pro Bowl level season out of Bennett, because I think he's still got plenty to offer. And it strikes me that the team had decided to get rid of the man and the personality, almost irrespective of the player. It's obviously quite a big comment to make, but, and you know, maybe he will fall off a cliff, which is perfectly possible. But, you know, if I had to, you know, put my money on either him having a good season or a bad season, I'm 100% going down the idea that we're going to be hearing his name a lot and seeing him in a lot of backfields.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. The other deal, as we say, was Richard Sherman. The team didn't want to pay him, come off his Achilles injury, $11.5 million. And the player who's been a perennial Pro Bowler pretty much since he had his first start against the Cincinnati Bengals, which is the first sound you heard on that clip a few minutes ago. He picked off Andy Dalton and even from day one talked a lot of noise about AJ Green after that game as well. He was released from his contract and the most obvious of obvious things happened, and the Sherman signed, went back home to California and signed for the San Francisco 49ers. But on his release, I mean, if Bennett is worth paying $2.5 million, even $9 million more, or in a bum Achilles, you pay Richard Sherman, who is locked down one half of the field for the defense, which is the head coach's specialty, as we've been told and keep being told so often. It's just, it was a very hard one to swallow, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much of this deal to break down, from the release to where he signed to the comments to the compensation. We should probably break it down into
bits. Yeah, right. I mean, so,
were you pro his release as a yes no issue?
Not even slightly.
Okay, I agree. In what for what reason?
Because, as I said, he's still got the ability. I mean, the last play we saw Richard Sherman make for the Seattle Seahawks, when his Achilles blew up, he had a pass breakup. I mean, even on one leg, he was still better than any cornerback we probably had on the field in Arizona that night. He's still top five NFL cornerbacks. I can't think of many more who are better than him. Although Marcus Peters, just to move off subject, a few weeks ago on NFL Network, put the top five cornerbacks as five Marcus Peters, which is just the best thing ever. But yeah, he's still the best at what he does. He talks a lot. He does, as he's shown the last few days. But he's done that for 6-7 years. It's how he made his name. He, like, way past mediocre and all the stuff after the championship game against the Niners. He's still one of the very, very best in this league. And there's no one we've tried, as we'll get onto a bit later, to fill with that $11 million. There's no one who's going to be as key, as reliable, I think, is probably the word I'm looking for, as Richard Sherman would have been, just to pay him that $11 million. And the fact he got, I mean, the way people are trying to sell the deal he got, but yeah, I just don't see any way that it was worth the growing pains it's going to have with the new Seahawks defensive backfield not to keep him around for one. Just let him see how his contract. But yeah, I mean, Adam.
Even aside from that, there's no one I've heard of in this team that's been a better player coach to younger guys in the team than Richard Sherman. And for me, if you want to get younger as a defense, which, you know, I guess is inevitable, and you have to say that's probably the thing that they have to do, but players like Justin Coleman, Shaq Griffin, you know, that $11 million that you're giving Richard Sherman, that could be worth it almost as a player coach. And if he does come back and have a great season, which I, for one, fully expect him to do, because he's that kind of guy, he's so cerebral, his tape study, you know, we've seen little snippets and documentaries, a second to none. For me, he is 100% a player, just to go back to my original point, that he is a guy that 2019, he could be an asset to this team. Yeah. And I just think that for so many reasons, even aside from playing, he would have been worth that money. And I just found it a very confusing thing to do. Another one, as with Bennett, that it was like, we're getting rid of this guy regardless, even though we don't really know why we're doing it.
Yeah, it was. It just made absolutely no sense. It was, yeah, I mean, people are trying to sell it each all in every different way. for why and all this. So he wasn't, he was same with Bennett, but on a different scale with Sherman. Everyone seemed to just kind of pull up with Sherman, it seems. And I think that all the, how quickly some people, a lot of people have turned just before he even joined a new team.
Also, like,
showing up quite easily as well.
You know, I don't know about you with Coventry or whatever, but when Spurs have had, you know, good teams like 2012, Harry Redknapp's last year, and the team breaks up because, you know, we lost Ledley King, Modric, Van der Vaart,
yeah,
and the manager, you miss, like, they're your guys. And, you know, some people, you know, there's a lot on Twitter which and Facebook which is really annoying of, like, you know, if you only started being a fan in 2012, then, you know, this is what it's like being a Seahawk or whatever, like, get off the bandwagon. I don't know what you expect me to do. Like, I only really found the game in 2012. And if you want to call me a bandwagon guy, then, you know, completely fine. Like, spent thousands of pounds of my own money to go and watch this team. Like, and I will continue to do so. But if that's what bandwagoning is, then fine. But this team is what made me fall in love with the sport and the Seahawks. And Richard Sherman was one of two parts, along with Marshawn Lynch, that made me do that. And in the same way that, you know, it's funny, like, when Marshawn Lynch retired, the whole city was like crestfallen and, oh my goodness, we're going to miss him so much. But this is basically the same thing. Like, we're losing a focal point of the team that everyone fell in love with. And this idea that, like, we used to be shit, so now, you know, stop moaning that we might be shit again, is just nonsense. Like, as a fan, you should always be aspiring to be good. And because you were once bad doesn't mean that, you know, things don't change. And, you know, the Seattle Seahawks are now a perennial, you know, they're a playoff team now. And just because they once weren't doesn't mean that, well, because they now may not be this year, well, that's just the status quo. Like, no, screw that. That's not why anyone should be a sports fan. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
I mean, we hear quite a lot, it's hard to be, it's hard to win, it's hard to get to a Super Bowl, it's hard to do this, it's hard to win a division in the NFL, because it's a league which is built on parity. When you look at the playoffs last year compared to 2016, it kind of, the NFL just shouts it from the rooftops of how it just shows that parity works. It's really fucking hard to be in that every year, like the Patriots have done for a decade and a half almost at this point. And we were emerging as one of those teams who could do that, and they've just kind of waylaid it all off for just for reasons that we're probably never gonna really know with certain players, and just their own mistakes they've made over the last couple of years with Sherman, with the trades they made, it didn't really pay off like they hoped. Obviously, draft picks last year, which definitely haven't paid off as they'd hoped. Like we've said, especially last year with all the political stuff with the anthem protests and Doug Baldwin, we've said last few years that you see what these players do off the field, it makes you proud to be a Seahawks fan. Two of the three players we've always mentioned in that last year were Bennett and Sherman with Doug Baldwin, and that doesn't change even if he wears a colour now, which is going to take some getting used to. Is that fair? Because, like, you can't celebrate him for one thing, and then you can't celebrate Sherman for being Sherman, then moan about Sherman being Sherman. That's basically what's happening right now, isn't it?
I mean, Seahawks fans on Twitter are doing it now when, you know, he's saying, you know, I'm looking to, you know, part of the reason I signed for San Francisco is so I could stick it to the Seahawks twice a year. And damn right, like, I'm not going to support him because he now plays for the enemy, but at this stage, in terms of from a human level, I fully understand what he did. And, you know, let's go on to his release and subsequent signing from San Francisco. For me, well, Michael Duggar, friend of the show, made a great point on Twitter that if you replace the word cut for fired, because ultimately that's what happened. Richard Sherman got fired by the Seahawks. And I think that word, you know, cut just makes it sound like, well, you know, just part of the game. But it is a firing. And so if you got fired and your competitor wanted to give you a new contract with good money, you would probably take it so you could stick it to the original guy. And ultimately, what did anyone expect Richard Sherman to do when he was fired? You know, ultimately, I think the San Francisco 49ers called, he said, and he's written a good Players Tribune article today. Apparently, he was called 3 minutes after being released. Now, you cannot tell me that if someone's going to call 3 minutes after him being released, that you couldn't have traded him for a seventh round pick somewhere. So ultimately, if you have rejected the chance to trade him because you're trying to be classy, which again, I'm not really convinced that washes, this is what you get. And if Sherman picks off Wilson to end a game, it's going to be a killer, but it's going to serve us right because we've allowed this to happen. Because if you knew what kind of guy Richard Sherman was, this was the only viable option aside from the Patriots.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the only place he was going to go.
Yeah, it most definitely. I mean, yeah, it's the most obvious thing that ever happened was him being, was it locked in the office with Lynch and all their guys 24 hours. I mean, people even moaned about that, like he did it so quickly. He's a competitor. He wants to compete against people who he sees have wronged him, and he's got a pretty valid point on that as well. It's just, yeah, it went from anger to, of course he has, of course he's doing this. And an hour or so, not even that, before we start recording, he obviously released that Players Tribune article, and that's just made people angry all over again. I mean, the fact that people went out and burnt Richard Sherman jerseys is just another level of, it's a very small minority, I know, but it's just another level. Just you're kind of doing what the team have done. You've kind of just give up on him when he's done nothing but put your team and put your city on his shoulders in certain aspects and certain aspects of what he's done in the last 6 years. Because, I mean, it's his noise, it's you mad bro, it's all the noise he made after the AJ Green stuff, it's the Aaron Andrews interview. That's the reason why the Seahawks were talked about, and as they have been talked about, as unlikable and everything else. It's what put this team on that national stage before any Super Bowl, before Percy Harvin kick returns and Malcolm Smith MVPs. It was Richard Sherman mouthing off for lesser thing, and the mouthing off he did to put this team on the stage is exactly the same. It's no different to what he said over the last week, is it?
Yeah, I mean, this is the best thing about Richard Sherman when he was a Seahawk, is that he was Richard Sherman the human, and ultimately, as he now plays for another team, you can't take that as you can't take offense to what he is. Like, he is a brilliant human being, and good luck to him. But if you think that he's not going to talk crap about us in the media or whatever, I don't know what you've been watching for the last 7 years, because this is what he is as a guy.
Yeah, 1,000%. It's just, the reaction to it is possibly more, it's getting up there on a par with the actual fact that he's no longer seeing. No, actually, we always joke about how dull certain players on the Seahawks' weekly press conferences are. And again, two of the more fun ones to watch were Bennett and Sherman, as you heard, with all the Skip Bayless stuff and everything else on the clip before. But yeah, it is the end, as that clip also says, of the good old days for the Seahawks. And the Seahawks, which won the Super Bowl, which have been the NFC West, well, not only the NFC powerhouse, but obviously the team on the top table in the NFC West, is probably not going to be one you expect to see there in 2018. Any other things that happened before free agency, Adam, you want to touch on with the Seahawks?
Not so much. I mean, there wasn't even that much talk about, big money moves, really. Obviously, Jimmy Graham was, sadly, it's players leaving as opposed to players coming in.
But the team did manage to keep hold of one before free agency kicked off. They did manage to re-sign probably the best free agent sign in the last couple of years from the Seahawks. Bradley McDougal did sign a deal which, one, I didn't expect him to get from Seattle, and it was quite surprising, and with all the, it was almost like a good, well, we'll put this out to stop people complaining that the world is ending, but it's a fitting reward, which was a pretty solid season for the former Buccaneer, isn't it, for McDougal?
Yeah, so I'm happy to keep McDougal. I thought he played well.
Yeah.
I saw Field Gulls, who I'm not the biggest fan of anymore, to be brutally honest. He was mentioning how, the way that good teams do things like what the Seahawks have done, which is use Richard Sherman's $11 million on signing Bradley McDougal, Deion Jordan, who are Barkevious Mingo, and someone else who I can't think of. But basically, that's where the $11 million has gone. That may be the case, but I don't know about you, but when I'm playing fantasy football, if my team isn't very good, but I've got a couple of stars, I always end up stupidly trading that star for like three or four crap players who I think might be good, and it doesn't end up working. I think it's a pretty risky strategy to do that, and I'm not sure that having, four mediocre players under the contract of what one superstar player is necessarily the way to go, that we're going to, you know, build a winning team again. We can discuss that later on, but
yeah.
Just wonder what your thoughts were on that, because I saw the article and thought pretty much the exact opposite of what it was trying to say.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, yeah, it did have a point. It's one way of looking at things, but it probably is one reason they wanted that 11 million to try and, I don't know, add more starter depth on the defense, which only really had for quite a few years four players already. Obviously, we've had injuries to both safeties, and obviously last year with Sherman. But apart from Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and the three safeties, and, well, and Michael Bennett, I guess there's not been anything coming after when the injuries have hit like they have the last couple of years. So maybe that just wholesome way it be. As I said a few minutes ago, I'd rather have 11 million being paid to Richard Sherman than four players I'm not quite sure are going to hit the heights and levels of the players who have left in their way. But I think the thing I keep coming back to is, well, so last year we had John Moffitt on, and he said that Pete Carroll didn't like coaching 30-year-olds, and that's just every move the Seahawks have made, apart from possibly one. That's all I keep thinking about, is he's getting rid of players once they hit 30, and that comment from Moffitt, while it was a throwaway and a bit of a jovial jab, it's starting to ring true. I think Richard Sherman did talk about the message, the chat from Carroll, all these stories and anecdotes have started to go stale, but that, I mean, while it may seem bitter or whatever, however other people want to line it up, it might be true that might hold some weight, mightn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting point, and I'm probably an overly emotional and hot take fan at the best of times, but I have likened Pete Carroll to Arsene Wenger every now and again, and that sort of idea of the message going stale but not changing the message is something that I think separates the great coaches like Bill Belichick or Alex Ferguson and the coaches that are able to build team after team after team to the coaches that are able to build a team but then not quite being sure how to get back to it. And, you know, Carroll's probably got... he's got, what, a three-year contract left, or is he...
I think he's got 2 years left.
Okay, so he's got probably enough time to rebuild a team, and I guess the next 2 years are going to decide an awful lot about what his overriding legacy are going to be, of whether it's going to be the coach that built the brilliant Seahawks team and is a hero, or if he goes down as a complete and utter god in the city for what he was able to do not once but twice. I don't know about, I'm personally not, if he had gone with all of his coaches, I wouldn't have been gutted, I have to say. They've changed so much that if they were going to change the coach as well, I'd have been like, okay, well, let's see what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think Carroll's got a lot to prove this year after three pretty down years, to be honest.
They've, eight coaches, coaches and assistants and position coaches were changed or released or not here anymore. But the top man in Pete Carroll was stuck around, which is okay. You stick around, but when we saw everything being changed with Cable being fired and Bevel being fired and Chris Richard being whatever sort of nonsense happened there, which was just a very strange situation. You kind of expect, okay, they're maybe going to change things up, and then you see who they hire. I mean, Mike Solari, I think, is a pretty good hire for offensive line coach. It's hiring Brian Schottenheimer, then you make the moves you've made or appear to be making, but even just with visits in the free agency period, it seems the way you've changed a lot, the person who possibly needed to open more things up in his own playbook and own ways, as we've seen with what Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay managed to do in LA and San Francisco, he seems to almost been reinforced, as he seems to gain more control than lost any control, which makes what's happened in the last 10 days or so even stranger, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was a Michael Corleone whacking at the end of the Godfather 1. he cleaned house and he's got everything back under control.
Yeah.
But I guess, to continue the analogy, it's whether someone's going to be firing through his window in a couple of years' time because things aren't going well. The hires of Solari, Schottenheimer... 100% suggest that the way the team think they're going to get back to winning is by ground and pound, heavy hitting, running football. Now, this year of all, we had Nathan Ernst do a brilliant podcast with us a couple of months ago, suggesting that actually running probably isn't at all part of the future of the game. So it's a pretty balls out move by Cal. I'm not, you will have seen, certainly Stu, I'm not sure whether our listeners will have seen that DJ Fluka was just signed from the free agent from the New York Giants, who his pass blocking grade from PFF was 76 out of 78 guards in the NFL last year. Which, you know, I'm no mathematician, but that's not great. That's not good. But apparently his run blocking under Solari was much better. So the team is going all out on Pete Carroll's philosophy. And I guess there's nowhere else to turn now if this doesn't go well.
No, that's the thing. I think if as you say, there'd been a whole new broom sweeping through VMAC and all these moves were made. I mean, especially if a certain person from Ann Arbor had made the trip out west, I think the Sherman deal would have been, firstly, even more ironic and probably more predictable. After Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett left, the team continued to cut and let defensive backs go. The team released Joe Mullane, who they tried their hardest to get rid of last October when they signed Dwayne Brown from Houston Texans. He has gone to very little fanfare, and he kind of never hit the heights he hit in 2014. Really, did he? Obviously, his body exploded on Super Bowl 49, but he never really hit those heights. And it was on-field boneheadedness and off-field tweeting which kind of led to a very very muted send-off for him. I mean, I don't think he's got a new team.
I don't think he has yet. I mean, obviously him still being a Seahawk is one of the reasons we haven't got a third round pick this year. Which is hugely frustrating. You know, there's so many mistakes that the team have made, you know, not necessarily deliberately, unwittingly, but you know, what Malik McDowell jumping on the ATV meant was that, you know, we lost our second round pick. And then you know, for Sheldon Richardson to go, because they didn't want to pay him, and then Jeremy Lain failing his physical meant they had to give up a third round pick to get Dwayne Brown, who actually didn't help much at all last year because we ended up going 9-7. Ultimately, the team is in a bit of a hole that bad decisions and bad luck have got them in, and even not even bad decisions, but decisions that in hindsight they wouldn't have made if they'd known how the year was going to pan out.
They didn't have the payoff that you'd expect. No.
And, you know, I think a lot of fans are, you know, trying to be very optimistic and say, oh, you know, we'll still be good. Ultimately, it's incredibly hard to be good in year one after making so many things, after so many things have happened that have gone against you. And I honestly am in a situation where if we won zero games next year, I honestly would not hold it against anyone. I wouldn't be, you know, well, if they won zero games because they tried to run the ball every down and they played, you know, stupid systems, then I'd be annoyed. But if they didn't win games because of lack of talent, we have to kind of expect that because we have no players and no draft picks.
No, I mean, I said to you before, well, I think I said maybe after as well, the only thing holding that hope is the fact who the quarterback is. I think he's going to count for a lot. Like he did last year, he basically got us above 500. With what, 36 or 37 touchdowns, everything else, and the running game you'd hope is going to be more productive, especially in the red zone, especially within the 5 yard line, and all the awful stats and facts and figures have come through that. But so that holds out hope that the team are going to be
the problem there is, you know, and much as Wilson is a really good quarterback, he's not Tom Brady level whereby he can throw to anyone. Who's he going to throw to?
Exactly.
And yeah, people can mack on Jimmy Graham all they want. I said this from sort of minute one when doing this podcast. Jimmy Graham and Doug Baldwin were a partnership that one of them would always take two guys out of the equation, leaving the other one single covered.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Doug Baldwin is the only person we've got left on the team who had more than 15 targets last year.
Yep.
Like, that's going to be hard for Wilson regardless of what you think of him as a quarterback. He could be the best quarterback in the world, and that's still going to be tricky for him to make magic.
Yeah, see, and the departures did continue. March 15th.
Sorry, I'm taking us on loads of tangents.
That's okay. March 15th, the departures did continue with Paul Richardson inking a deal with the Washington Redskins. After a second round pick in 2014, Richardson, despite a few injuries through the couple of years, I did, as Adam can attest to, continue to bang that. And Richardson ended his Seahawks career with 95 receptions, 1,302 yards. and 8 touchdowns, with 6 of them coming last year. I mean, the money was quite a bit higher than we expected. It was clearly a lot higher than the Seahawks were ever going to go for Paul Richardson, but it, for all the, I mean, how quickly and how readily and how often he was written off when he just could not stay healthy the first couple of years, it's a pretty cool comeback story and very much deserved, and the same way as Sherman, he's going to be fondly watched on, well, the opposite to Sherman, I guess, he's going to be fondly watched on from afar in the Redskins burgundy, isn't he, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I'm delighted for him as a guy who went through the injury hell with us, and last year was hugely impressive, and even back into the playoffs from the year before. He may be slightly, the equivalent of a not a great goal scorer, but a scorer of great goals with regards to the catches that he makes. But he was a load of fun to watch, and one of my abiding memories will be you calling his touchdown in Giant Stadium, which was just great fun. The numbers are slightly deceiving, because if he ends up making $40 million on a 5-year deal, he will have really earned that $40 million with good play.
Yeah.
If you look at it more of what it actually is, whereby a 3-year $20 million contract, you know, with the money in the NFL these days, that's not huge money.
No.
And,
no,
you know,
but
if he gave you 3 seasons like last year, I would say that last season he was worth $6 million. Do you know what I mean?
I do think they had a limit, but I think he wanted, after what he'd been through the last couple of years, he clearly wanted the luck of being paid massively, which he has,
like, and it's in a
market which is quite heavy. I mean, some of the deals, I think we talked about on Twitter, about Dante Moncrief's deal in Jacksonville, which is just, especially after they released Allen Hurns, it's kind of like, Hurns and Robinson is probably better than Moncrief.
For sure, and I'm not saying that we should have given Richardson that contract, but there was a lot of, like, Twitter guffawing about the money that Richardson got.
Yeah.
You know, there's more than enough money in the NFL right now that you can take a punt like that on Paul Richardson. If you look at Alex Smith, had loads more success on the deep ball last year, and Richardson is that kind of guy. Good luck to him, and I hope he plays up to that contract and more and gets his 5 years, because he seemed like nothing but a good guy in every minute he was in Seattle.
Yeah, so after Chris Richard's departure, Richard Sherman's departure, Paul Richardson's departure, someone else with Richard is syllable in his name, Sheldon Richardson, after giving up a second-round pick and whatever else come with that deal, we sent Jermaine Kearse to the New York Jets, ending in a 1-year rental for the Seahawks as he signed a free agent deal with the Minnesota Vikings. I like Bennett, he really does bolster one of the top teams in the NFC last year. They've got a pretty scary defensive front with Sheldon in the mix, but it was kind of, I mean, I've spoken about it a few times, he's a solid player, but with what you gave up and what we now don't have with that second round pick this year, it kind of was a little disappointing. 44 tackles, 1 sack and 1 interception and 1 forced fumble, but it was disappointing that it was just a one and done for Sheldon, wasn't it?
Yeah, I feel like he played better than his numbers, and I feel like that might be the way that a Seahawk scheme ends up making its D-line sort of try and be. I don't think that, that they're much more like gap stoppers and stuff like that, and I'm not necessarily convinced that they got the very best out of Sheldon Richardson, but
no.
It says a lot that they weren't even willing to offer a fairly mediocre package to Richardson or even try and get something long-term done. I mean, I think a lot of people assumed that when Sherman and Bennett were gotten rid of, that money would be reinvested into trying to keep someone like Sheldon Richardson, who can, be a player for years to come. But no, I mean, they obviously were just not impressed at all with what they got, and I guess just one of those deals that they would really like to have back, and even if it did mean that Jermaine Kearse would be playing in blue and green again.
Yeah, that like revisionist, I think Nathan Oates touched on that over the weekend, the revisionist around Jermaine Kearse is just absolutely laughable. We almost celebrated the fact that he was part of that trade, and a year later now we've got, as just we mentioned, no one for no one we know what we're getting with wide receiver core. He's turned into like Steve Largent with certain core, as it appears, and people want him back when, yes, he had a good season in New York, but it's probably a season he wouldn't have had in Seattle. I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's much easier to look good if you're a mediocre player in a bad team and a mediocre player in a good team.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously, as if that wasn't enough, the third of the top three unrestricted free agents the Seahawks had and maybe could have tried to keep, from what it appears, didn't really try that hard to keep. Jimmy Graham signed with the Green Bay Packers. Graham, who has been mentioned on virtually every single one of these podcasts for different reasons, was acquired in 2015 trade from the Saints. And he does leave, despite what people may want you to believe and want to think about his time in Seattle, does leave the Seahawks as the team's all-time leader in receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns for a tight end. I mean, it's as you can see, if you ever go and look up the list of tight ends he's surpassed, it isn't saying much, but it's saying a lot that in 3 years he is the best ever Seahawks tight end. And it's another case similar to Sherman that it's as good as it's going to get for quite a few while at the position and with what Jimmy Graham can bring on the field, isn't it, Adam?
I would say this is the ultimate be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
If you read Twitter and Facebook, you know, about Graham, all you read about is the drops and apparently the lack of effort. That's fine. You can have those views. And if someone else can score me 10 touchdowns, then I will happily eat crow and say, you're right, Graham wasn't particularly special.
I think people are being incredibly
reductive about the role that Jimmy Graham did. And it's, you know, he was the second highest touchdown scorer in the entire NFL last year. That's not something that any old Tom, Dick and Harry can do. That requires a serious amount of talent. And for my money, Jimmy Graham had it, and I absolutely loved him. I loved watching him play, and I think he was wasted for 2 years, used very well for 1 year. But ultimately, for all the, you know, posturing by Schneider and Carroll, like, oh yeah, we really wanted to keep Jimmy Graham. They never wanted to keep him.
No.
And I guess they'll know in a year's time if it was the right move or not.
And I think it's fair to say I don't think he really wanted to stay either.
Also
I think
true.
I mean we've seen slight comments and nudges from people in the media who said he couldn't leave that building quick enough after the season finished. But one other departure to touch on is one which is, if Sheldon Richardson was a trade which is didn't bring much, mainly for the fact that we don't have a second round pick this year. So yeah, and one more departure for the Seahawks this free agency period. If the Sheldon Richardson trade didn't pay off as well as we had hoped, mainly for the fact that because of the fact we give up, we don't have a second round pick in next month's draft, the trade to bring Matt Tobin over from the Philadelphia Eagles had even less of an impact. And now he's left the team and signed with the New England Patriots. It's possibly one of the more pointless and nonsense trades of all Schneider's moves, isn't it, over the last 6-7 years?
Yeah, I mean, at least he didn't hurt us in terms of what we had to give
up.
I mean, at least he wasn't a Luke Jokel who cost us $8 million, for goodness sake, who I don't even think has had one free agency visit in the last 10 days. I mean, I just saw BVM on Twitter say that this in day two of free agency last year, the Seahawks made Luke Jokel the fifth highest paid guard in the NFL. So read into that what you will. So, you know, at least Tobin didn't really cost us anything, but, you know, would it stun anyone if he went to New England and looked like a very passable offensive lineman? I don't
know.
Not
at all.
Not, yeah, probably right.
Yeah, so after with all the departures, the team had, well, what Bob Condotta, the Seattle Times, said, around 40 roster spots up for them, so they did decide to start trying to bring in players. The first player they signed, I believe, was the former first-round pick for the Cleveland Browns, and the guy had a somewhat of a career reinvention last year, a refurbishment for his career last year in Indianapolis, Barkevious Mingo. Mingo is listed as a linebacker, and he's possibly going to fill, on certain downs, I'd expect, the role that Bruce Irvin spent 3-4 years playing. But it's a deal which could have quite a nice payoff in when all is said and done, but it's not one which comes with a lot of background to back up that possible success, if that makes sense, Adam.
It's what they really love that 2013 draft, don't they?
Yeah,
they cannot get enough of it. I honestly don't even know how to evaluate this one. It's a decent chunk of change for a guy who hasn't necessarily suggested that he could do it yet. But then if you're looking at that draft for every, you know, you've got Luke Jokel, who's someone that didn't get paid for a reason because he was Bobbins. And then you've got Deion Jordan, who didn't get paid because there were issues that, but actually there might be a player there. So I find it a really difficult deal to analyze. And I think anyone that's saying good deal, bad deal, I don't know where they're getting this from, because I think it's going to be one of those where the proof's going to be in the pudding and it's either going to work out or it's not.
It is quite an interesting deal, I think. He's had two sacks, two pass defense, and three fumbles for the Colts last season. So yeah, he definitely did. And what was a pretty ranked defense for Indianapolis as well. Didn't have a lot of stars or top performers, but Mingo was amongst them. And there's a few Colts fans I know were quite disappointed to see Mingo leave. The team also then did sign to replace, probably in position only, Ed Dixon from the Carolina Panthers. If that big Mingo deal was big, it was relatively big money for Ed Dixon. And as we said earlier about Pete Carroll wanting to run the ball, Ed Dixon marked out as one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL. Was Carolina Panther, and that's probably the main reason the Seahawks chase after him and give him the money they've given him, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, $10 million over 3 years is again a fair chunk of cheese, and it fits the philosophy of what the team are trying to do this year, and therefore it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I guess you will have your own opinions on whether you think that philosophy is correct, but for what they're trying to do, this seemed like a very sensible move.
Yeah. He is coming off his most productive season, I think, as a receiver. He's 437 yards and just 30 catches for the Panthers last year. Well, that team offense just slowly become a Christian McCaffrey show at the back end of the season. But yeah, as you said, he is going to be a pass blocking tight end first and foremost. It's going to be interesting to see, as we say, replace the yardage and the input we got from that position last year, because it doesn't appear, with Luke Wilson still remaining a free agent, Nick Vinette is still a massive question mark, and Tyron Swopes is, I think, the other guy with the tight end on the roster. It's going to be quite an interesting way how they do slice up those 10 touchdowns, because you can't imagine, I can't really foresee Ed Dixon being a 10 touchdown guy, can you, in 2018?
No, I mean, on that, I think Luke Wilson's the kind of guy that I would like to keep around if they can do, you know, a fairly cheap deal, just because he strikes me as a guy who understands what being a Seahawk is.
Yeah.
And in the same way that, like, funnily enough, he just got released today, but like Mercedes Lewis at the Jaguars, he understands what it was like to be a Jaguar, and he had a really good year last year. And I feel that, like, Luke Wilson, there's actually a pretty decent player in there who's got good speed, and I don't know, he strikes the kind of guy that I want in my team as opposed to on someone else's team.
Yeah, I'd agree. I feel
the same way about, I think we've missed over him, unless you're going to go back to Marthus, but Deshaun Shedd is another guy who I felt exactly the same way about, and I'm very sad to see him leave.
Yeah, Deshaun Shedd was released because there was issues with accrued time, I think it was. So the team released him, and he immediately went to Detroit and was offered a deal, which John Schneider told his agent was not a deal they were going to get from the Seattle Seahawks. It was just a case yet again of another one being where they didn't want to pay, which is just quite, firstly, frustrating, and secondly, a bit bewildering, because they don't seem to have the guys in the building to cover that. Shed was emerging as one of the best, he's emerging as the best player to play opposite Richard Sherman before his knee gave up on him in Atlanta, wasn't he, Shed?
Yeah, by far. I mean, Deshaun Shedd the year before last, I think, was better than Shaq Griffin was last year. And that's not a slight on Shaq Griffin, but I think Shedd, before he did his ACL, was genuinely, like, playing to a really high level.
Yeah, he was. He was. I mean, there's some games, I think Jackson Bevans always used to talk about him in his cigar thoughts on field goals, where it was just some of the stats from PFF of how little Sherman and Shedd were giving up on both sides of the field. It was just quite ridiculous, really. The team also have signed in the last few days former Cardinals wide receiver Jerron Brown. Jerron Brown is who tore his ACL in 2016 and got just a one-year extension from Cardinals last year. Averaged 15.4 yards per catch on 31 receptions of 477 yards. And it's 6'2", I think, Jerron Brown is. This could be
quite an interesting name to watch is the team stat camp and the draft rolls around as well, because it is a body type that the Seahawks have lacked at that position since Sidney Rice retired, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, both Browns at Arizona always struck me as, you know, really good downfield speed. And so I wonder if Brown is sort of like an ersatz version of Paul Richardson, who's coming in and, you know, take the top of the defense, you know, catch, you know, deep passes. Ironically, catching has been his main problem. And I guess it's one of those things that you're either going to have the yips or you're not. I don't think anyone can have, like, an opinion either way on this signing. It's one of those which just is going to sort of happen either way. It's certainly not the most inspiring thing of all time, but it's one of those that I guess may work, or maybe a camp cut if the worst comes to the worst.
Yeah, and then the other person, obviously, as Adam said, the team have apparently, per Jason Lackelvor, agreed to terms with former Chargers and New York Giants offensive guard DJ Fluka in the last hour. So the team have also signed former Los LA Rams, St. Louis Rams safety Maurice Alexander. The only thing I remember Maurice Alexander for is headhunting Jimmy Graham 2 years ago, and that was kind of a bit annoying that I saw he was signing, but I think I kind of didn't really want that on this team, really. But he was cut, I think, in December by the Rams, and so won't count in any of the compensatory picks stuff next year, although it doesn't appear that the Seahawks will get much in that way. But Maurice Alexander is just more depth, more solid depth, rather than adding a star back there, isn't it, at safety? Obviously, a lot of talk was with Tyrann Mathieu possibly being a target, but he signed a prove his worth deal for Houston. But Maurice Alexander isn't on that Honey Badger level, but he's a solid, if unspectacular, Adam.
I find this a very cathartic move. If you remember our very first podcast, I think I mentioned that we were looking to build a team full of safeties. With the number we picked up and drafted. And considering we drafted about 7 of them last year and have picked up another one and yet to get rid of any of them, providing Cam Chancellor is still on the roster, maybe it's a throwback Thursday or throwback Tuesday even to those heady days of spring 2016 where we were talking about building a team full of safeties. So maybe that's where this deal's coming from. Maybe they listen to the podcast.
Maybe. And also the essay they did make, which is possibly one of the strange deals that people have seen in NFL recent history. The team sent a conditional 2020 seventh round pick to the Cleveland Browns for a cornerback called C.J. Smith, who was an undrafted rookie out of North Dakota State. He signed with the Eagles basically because I think they just wanted to sign someone who Carson Wentz knew when he got to Philadelphia. And then he spent last year for the Cleveland Browns and has only played in playing 3 games, I think, in his early career. This is kind of one of those, just as Bob Condotta says, just way to fill the roster. It's possibly the cheapest draft compensation ever given up in a deal, isn't it? I mean, compensatory pick, a conditional pick in the seventh round is something, but to do it 2 years down the road is quite strange.
I don't understand the, like, I don't know, like, why not just sign me or something? Like, if you need a body that badly to play, like, I'll do it. Like, you don't even need to pay me particularly. Like, yeah. I'll be on the scout team for you know, 1 day of training before they realize that I'm rubbish and they want to get rid of me.
Yeah.
It's a strange one, but I guess the only reason is that they need 90 bodies to start camp at some point. And at the minute, I think they've got 53 guys on the roster. And they've only got 7, 8 draft picks. So they've got to find 29 people somehow. And I guess this is one way of doing it.
I legitimately had to Google not only the fact that he was a real player, but if the Browns and Seahawks and the people we're talking about in the tweets were from the same sport we're talking about, because it just didn't, this player I've never even heard of, and it just seemed like a really non-NFL deal to make. It's just very strange, but you never know.
The producer of Dave Softee Marla's show on KJR, Kevin Shockey, he also had to Google who the guy was, which is especially ironic because Shockey is, in fact, an Eagles fan, and he had no idea who the guy was. So I think that probably says everything you need to know about that situation.
Yeah. There's someone on Twitter, we quickly just glance onto Twitter. DJ for Jordan Renan on Twitter said on DJ Fluka, when he was on the field, the New York Giants run game averaged over 20 yards more per game on the ground when Fluka was in at guard. So that's something, I guess, but it's a deal which doesn't really get the juices flowing too much. There are a few Seahawks who are still out there. Obviously, Chris Carson wasn't
option. Mike Davis was an option. Deion Jordan was to his original round tender. Not a first. It is a first round tender, but it's a first round tender in name alone. It's not in pay.
Chris Carson's a rookie, no? You meant Mike Davis?
Yeah, Mike Davis. Yeah, my bad. I was just seeing someone talk about Chris Carson. So yeah, Mike Davis is. I think he's in LA today. There is one name who keeps popping up. He's still cropping up there. He spent a few days in Seattle, apparently. In this time last week, Ndamukong Suh, who currently is in Los Angeles visiting the Rams, which is, given how this offseason's gone so far, I think it's probably the perfect end to free agency for the Seahawks, isn't it, if he signs alongside Aaron Donald for a year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you told me, if he signs for the Rams, we'll have to snap the ball sideways against him.
I can't find that tweet. I need to try and find it. Someone said if the Rams sign Sue and pay Donald, the Seahawks may as well snap the ball sideways twice. It's not fair. But like the Eagles are doing with their defensive line, they're making the most of the things we made the most of in 2013 with a cheap quarterback, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it might become a way that actually is starting to damage the sport slightly. But not, but that sounds like I'm a bitter fan. I'm not. I'm trying to make a point that, like, if teams can only win when they've got a rookie quarterback, which, you know, when the crop of superstar quarterbacks like Brady, Rodgers and Breeze move on, I think, and sort of the game sort of levels itself out a bit more. If you're at a stage whereby all the teams that have rookie quarterbacks can start spending loads of money, I wonder if they sort of try and shuffle that around a little bit to stop that from happening, because they're always trying to make rules to stop parity. I mean, thankfully, Jared Goff is the quarterback for the Rams, so ultimately, there isn't too much to worry about, really.
it fits more with Wentz because he's actually able and willing quarterback. But also, it would also make the way that Tennessee have wasted, what, 2-3 years of Mariota's career with their bizarre play calling and offensive game planning, even stranger, because they've pretty much at this point wasted it. And also, with that said, with the lack of cap space they have, the Dallas Cowboys are completely gushing away that what they've got with not just a quarterback, but a running back as well, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, they've only got one more year before they have to pay Prescott, obviously. I think this is quite an important year for Dak Prescott, who I do think is a good quarterback, but certainly didn't live up last year to the heights of 2016. It's a massive draft for so many teams. Unfortunately, we're sort of on the outside looking in unless we can get more picks, which sort of leads me on to a point that we probably should discuss in Earl Thomas number 29. I don't know about you, but if I'm looking at the way in which the Sherman, I was vehemently against the Sherman trade last year because I thought we could offer the team something, but if you consider that they probably maybe could have scrounged a first round pick off someone maybe from that, you certainly could get that from Earl Thomas. And the thought of him leaving in a year for nothing, if the team are in such a rebuild mode now, I have to say, if they could get something like a first round pick, I would be probably open to trading him right now, because I'm not convinced he particularly wants to be there in the first place.
No, I don't think he's fully invested in the team anymore. I don't think the fact that people like Amphora and Ian Rappaport Rap Sheet, whatever his name is, the amount of his name is coming up on their feeds and their timelines and their bits to camera on different networks suggests that the team are quite active in trying to get rid of him. If they can get a first round pick for Earl Thomas, it's a pick they're not going to get next year when he leaves for, as you say, for nothing. So if you can get a first round pick, if you can get a first round pick and a fourth round pick for him, you could quite easily turn that fourth round pick into a third round pick or a second round pick, and you got undrafted free agents and everything else that comes with this team probably this year more than last few. But I don't want to see Earl Thomas go, because for one, it would mean I have to spend quite a lot of money on new jerseys, because I think when you got Tyler Lockett and Walter Jones, who's still just all it needs now is Walter Jones to come out of retirement and sign for like the Rams or something, and just I won't be able to wear any jerseys. But at this point, I think it is just a matter of when. As you say, I would be against it, but if they're gonna do all this, what they've done so far, you might as well, and it would
pay off more than it will 12, 13 months down the line. So for,
I've got a deal or no deal for you that I'm, okay. I wonder, I'm just thinking about in my head.
God.
The Seahawks give Earl Thomas and the 18th overall pick to Cleveland for the number 4 overall pick.
Oh, no, because I'd be really worried about what they're going to do with that 4th overall pick.
But see, for that 4th round pick, you could probably get all of your picks back.
Yeah.
From someone like a Buffalo who desperately need to move up.
But if you're moving up once, you're not going to move back, if that makes sense. If you're going to move up that high, it's good. Yeah.
Well, you'd have to have your trade button sorted already.
Also, Earl Thomas going to Cleveland Browns, just that's not fair. On Earl Thomas, really, is it? I mean, he's the best player.
Oh, screw that.
Okay. I don't know. It's
With respect to Earl Thomas, it'd be great to see him have his dreams scenario, but I'm already pissed off that we lost our best defender, in my opinion, to our bitterest rivals, and I have no interest in letting that happen again. And as classy, in inverted commas, the team wants to be when they fire someone, we should be calling the shots where we send our players. We pay them well enough. We should send them to places where it suits us.
Except to Cleveland, but I would be really worried about what they would do with that 4th overall pick. I would be petrified especially after signing blocking tight ends and Mike Solari, and
they'd go for Nelson the guard, wouldn't they?
You'd hope so.
I hope they'd trade it for a billion and one picks.
Yeah, but Saquon Barkley is a person who exists. And also, I do kind of want that, just to see absolute meltdown on Twitter.
It would be hilarious.
But yeah, that is a deal which seems to be coming quite soon. Moving on, we'll just quickly talk about the draft, which is a month away.
All right, this is Michael Sean Dugar, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
So, yeah, the NFL 2018 NFL draft is just over a month away. It's in Dallas's, I think it's in the stadium, isn't it? Or is it their practice facility or something ridiculous? The team currently do have the 18th pick, as you just said about Earl Thomas. They could have a lot more than that, but 18 doesn't seem to be the spot that they're going to pick in anyone's world, Adam.
I wouldn't have thought so. Just to take you behind the curtain, dear listeners, we did just worry that the whole thing hadn't been recorded, but I have found the Skype recorder, and it does appear to be going up at a rate of knots of kilobytes, so we're flying. Don't worry, everyone, you will hear this podcast. I can't see them trading at 18. The Seahawks team are a classic trade-down team, and there's been some interesting stats recently that I read that actually having the more picks lower down might be better off. I'm torn by it because I look at the team as lacking in star quality now. If you look at Sherman going, Bennett going, Chancellor probably going, Averill probably going, you've got Wagner, you've got Baldwin, you've got Wilson. People like to throw KJ White right into the mix there, but he didn't have as great a year last year. That would suggest to me he's still a star linebacker like he used to be.
Yeah.
And I'd love someone to come in and be a real blue chip talent. But then if you read all of the fantastic draft analysis by people like Rob Staton, they would say that there is no star to pick at 18. So to that end, you know, try and replenish your picks and get them back. And I guess that's probably the best way to do it. So I do expect them to trade back.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than once either.
No, me either. But to be honest, I couldn't even tell you where I expect them to go in the draft, because literally every position group and the team right now, for me, has a hole that you could fill very comfortably with a high, medium, or low pick.
Yeah, apart from one.
But Austin Davis is still the backup quarterback, and ultimately you do need backup quarterbacks.
Yeah, I guess.
You'd like a bit more security. If Wilson was to get hurt, which is probably due at some point, he's going to get hurt. He's a professional athlete. He's going to get injured at some point. And I'd like a bit more security behind him than what we've got.
Yeah, I mean, someone like Riley Ferguson on the third day, the Memphis quarterback, would be quite nice, although he had quite a wild combine from what I remember watching of him. His throws were adventurous at times, but I think he would be someone they could certainly more than likely be there on day 3. It could be someone they target at that and kind of do what the Patriots have done with Matt Castle and every other backup quarterback they've had, 15 years is making money by not playing, just being a really a top level quarterback, which you don't, Russell Wilson will emerge to be in 2018 if this team is going to do anything even close to enjoyable. But the thing with the draft for me is, if they've done all these moves for certain quieting down the defense off the field, you'd expect that it's certainly going to be a case where they may start building around their quarterback and flipping it over to an offensive team, even with all the running back, running game. There is some players there, 18, who they could really, really start to show up. As you say, there is, you could pick a player and pick a name and pick a position. It would make sense at 18, at 24, at 26, at 31, at 42, wherever they may end up picking for once. But it's just going to be a lot more frustrating this year. We're going to not have to stay up for as long this year, but I have to stay up this long this year, because they're not going to pick at 18 unless someone really does fall. But I don't see that happening. Obviously, the draft is, as I said, a month away. Free agency is now entering the second wave, as insiders and journalists are calling it over in America. DJ Fluka is the first Seahawks signing in that wave. They do a path, I don't think he's going to his next visit. Terrell Pryor is in town for a visit, but he, as you said, probably like an hour ago now, Adam, it's a move which doesn't really make much sense if it's just kind of wasting a year for wasting a year's sake, isn't it, with Terrell Pryor? I mean, he could come in and be the 10-touchdown guy that we've lost in Jimmy Graham, but I think your pal Softy said it's a case where you kind of, if you're going to do what they've done so far, you kind of want to see more from the David Moores and the Amara Darbos of the world than pay Terrell Pryor, Adam.
I'd rather bring back Kaysom Williams.
Yeah.
To be honest. He wouldn't cost you anything like, I mean, I imagine Pryor's going to want, you know,
6-7.
Yeah, which is basically the money that they're giving Paul Richardson.
Yeah.
So there's just no way that works. So I'd rather, you know, we actually mentioned Kaysom Williams as a Terrell Pryor comp last season. That's sort of one route, you know, big win in the end zone kind of guy. I'd rather get him and see if he can offer anything, as opposed to spending money on Terrell Pryor, who almost certainly isn't going to be on the team in 2019, which, as I said, is my barometer for everything this year.
Yeah, it's a very strange visit to take after the moves they made a bit before. Obviously, you are someone who sorted out your scene ticket at the new White Hart Lane, or I don't think they've named it yet, have they, Adam?
Not yet. They're going to do naming rights soon, apparently. Although, weirdly, they said if they don't get naming rights, they're going to call it the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, despite there already being a perfectly good name that everyone's used for 120 years that we could use already. But, you know, who am I to tell them what to do?
Yeah, that's a very, very valid point. Obviously, there's been a lot of panic. It's a lot of panic just because of nothing. The tickets will come, the game will happen, and everyone needs to calm down with the London game, don't they?
Yes, as per has been since minute one. I tried to tell them. I tried to tell you all, but you didn't listen.
No, yeah. So obviously, I think the ticket information will be coming out in the next few weeks via NFL UK. For those who are interested, Adam did time before we start recording. The roof is going on the TBD. To be named stadium. Anything else? Anyone you want to put in the proverbial bin at this juncture of the season? Off season?
It kills me to do this because I absolutely love his analysis and whatever. But Gruden, get in the bin. What are you doing? Firstly, he was basically like, we refute using all the statistics and we're going to take football back to the olden days. So, like, that is stupid because
it's Pete Carroll on steroids.
Yeah, and maybe a lot more than that. I mean, it's ridiculous to suggest that doing things by modern technology is not the way to do things. I mean, that's like a Trumpism. It's just ridiculous. Secondly, Jordy Nelson instead of Michael Crabtree, that's just weird. Eric Decker's in for a visit today. I mean, what are they doing?
I mean, we've clearly shown that we like the 2013 draft. They clearly like the 2008 to 2010 soft spot. It's almost like John Gruden hasn't had a job watching the sport for the last decade and thinks it's still a decade ago when he's signing players who were good, able. I mean, giving Jordy Nelson that money. I mean, I know a lot of people wanted the Seahawks to have a look at him with poorest night in town, but I would not have been comfortable giving Jordan Nelson that money. He appears to be, through no fault of his own, just Mother Nature, just appears to be broken. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he did get
five touchdowns in five games with Rodgers last year. But he strikes the kind of guy that needs that synergy, and no other team can have the time to build that with their quarterback again this season.
Yeah, we saw at the end of his career, people like Randy Moss would go to any team and just have it, but that's Randy Moss. Jordy Nelson is not even in the same atmosphere as Randy Moss is in terms of talent, I think. But Randy Moss is just probably the GOAT. But I think I don't see how that's going to work. And not just at wide receiver, they signed Doug Martin when Marshawn Lynch exists. I mean, it was pretty... If Sherman and Bennett's departures, Bennett in particular, was predictable, the fact that John Gruden wasn't going to pull up with Marshawn Lynch's shtick was probably even more predictable, and it seems to be holding some weight with signing Doug Martin, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just a generally strange off-season from Oakland, who... I don't know, maybe their fans are saying, well, we used to be rubbish, so everyone has to accept being rubbish again. Who knows? Maybe that's not just a Seahawks Twitter thing.
And talking of Seahawks, related with the Raiders, they have moved Bruce Irvin back to defensive end from being a linebacker, and Bruce Irvin celebrated the news on Twitter by tweeting, I think it was hands up in the air, don't have to practice pass coverage. Don't have to drop back into coverage now, which is barely Bruce Irvin. Still one of my favourite players, the Seahawks, is that one we saw live against the Raiders 4 years ago. When we picked Derek Carr and ran it back. It was just athleticism coming out of his ears. For me, put in the bin, I can't think of one. Probably would be John Gruden. I don't understand what's going on there. All the celebration he got from him, they moved to LA. Is it next year they moved to LA?
Yeah.
I mean, I think if it goes the way I think it might go, I think the Raiders fans might drive them to the new Spartan Castle or wherever it is.
It's Vegas, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, of course it is to Vegas. Yeah, it's my bad. Yeah, I think the Raiders fans might chip in and buy them the Greyhound to move them back up there, I think, because this year's not going to be much fun. And all that entire division has kind of flipped every year now. And I think San Diego Chargers, with signing Mike Pouncey, yes, they have a ridiculously strong offensive line if they can get all five on the field, and I think they would be the team who could possibly do what the Jags did last year, just kind of come out of from out of nowhere somewhere and really have a run in the AFC next year.
There is another person who deserves a spot in the bin. I fully agree with the Chargers. I think they're going to be the cream of that division by a distance. And actually, this guy is sort of going to take out a timeshare in the bin. He spends so much time in there these days. And that's Hugh Jackson, who on March the 15th announced, without question, his starting quarterback for the following season, despite the fact he's probably going to take a quarterback with his first pick. I mean, who the fuck is this guy? He is absolutely stealing a living there. And it is a complete and utter farce that he is just getting away with nonsense after nonsense after nonsense. Dorsey is doing, I would say, a very good job in sitting at the table that Sashi Brown laid for him very well. But they've got this constant of the idiot Hugh Jackson there, who is going to balls everything up again. And they could be a team that wins seven or eight games next year if they're well coached. But they're not going to be well coached. They're going to be crap again.
No. I love Tyra Taylor. Ty God, I think it's a properly good move for him in more than one way to go to Cleveland. I mean, I know it's a strange sentence to say, but he needed to get out of Buffalo. Worse than Marshawn Lynch did 8-9 years ago when he came to Seattle. He needed to get the hell out of there. Yeah. And he probably will be the start, but as you say, it's just utter stupidness to say that at this stage when you're 5 weeks away from spending a high pick on a quarterback who...
And Jackson also wanted to give a second and a third round pick for AJ McCarron,
which is just even nonsense.
Who got what, the Patriots?
No, 1 year, $8 million. Sorry, the Bills.
I mean, just get this guy out of the league.
So if maybe this year we should do like a proverbial bin of the year, just name it like the Hugh Jackson Award or something. Will we get sued? I mean, Brandon and Adam have the Skip Bayless.
Okay, I mean the Lombardi is called the Lombardi because, you know, of someone's service to the game. And for anything, I think Hugh Jackson's service to the proverbial bin.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to run that past our lawyers if we have any. I'm not sure if we have any.
Can we call it the proverbial Jackson, or is that?
No, because I mean we know a Jackson. You kind of may be offended.
Yeah, that is interesting. Okay, yeah. we'll work on it.
We'll work on it, but then,
we'll speak to our friends in the Seahawkers podcast at some point over the off season, and we can work out how we can incorporate the Jackson into common lexicon.
Yeah, and if there's anyone who knows a trophy maker, get in touch with both of us. To do that, you can do that. That's a good segue, wasn't it? On Twitter, at @Stu_Court, at @AdamDNathan, at @RossBell1984. The chat's Twitter is at SeahawkersUK. It's Seattle UK Seattle Seahawks fans on Facebook, The Pedestrian Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and the website is ukseahawkers.com. We are 8-9 weeks away from the third annual national meet in Bristol, which I'm there. I'm not sure about Ross, and I'm guessing you're waiting on what happens at Wembley in a few weeks in the semi-final.
Indeed. Before inevitable 1-0 defeat to Man United, I can't book anything.
Yeah, or your catering is taking you to the Palace that day. Is that maybe what's happening?
More like Crystal than Buckingham, but you know, who knows.
Yeah, so there's still, I think there's about 13, 14 spaces left. We are still trying to work on getting a guest of honour for that day, and we have sent messages out which have so far been ignored, which is very helpful and nice of the person who's receiving them. We probably will do stuff over the draft unless anything seismic happens with the Seahawks. Earl Thomas is in he's in Great Britain and Ireland this weekend. He's over in Belfast next Monday night, and he's in Dublin, I think it's on Friday or Saturday, on the NFL UK meet. And also a former Seahawk, Alex Collins, is also jetting over for what it should be and what usually are pretty fun nights and evenings and events with Neil Reynolds and the NFL UK guys. So if you get a chance to go to Dublin or Belfast to see Mr. Earl Thomas, if he is still a Seahawk by that point in the week, if he's not, there'll be some very awkward looking Seahawks fans who have only gone to see the Seahawk Earl Thomas and not the Cleveland Brown or Thomas. Have a good night. Have an enjoyable evening. Maybe get all the merch and stuff signed. But until next time, I think that's everything. We've covered everything that we had on.
Yeah, I think we have. It's been good to be back behind the mic, and looking forward to doing plenty more going into the new season. Just by the way, like, and this is probably a bit harsh, like, everyone is in. You don't need to point out that you're still in because the team aren't good. Like, well done you. We're all in. Like, we've signed up for this for life. Everyone's in. Don't worry. You can keep your Facebooks away. We're all in.
Yeah, and as I said, the roof is up, yeah?
The roof is going up, as I predicted and as I promised you years ago.
Yeah, it's almost like Daniel Levy knows what he's doing. This has been the Pedestrian Podcast. Until next time.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks. Super Bowl 48 champion.